Now, we saw a pretty large roster of proposals this time around. Most of them were voted down. The decrim marijuana one, that did pass. But for the ones that were voted down, what do you think the thought was behind the voting public? Why did they go down?
I got to tell you that I'm still undecided as to how that happened. Because, as I said off the top, we had an electorate that went to the polls and by significant numbers in the state of Michigan reelected President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at proposals 2 and proposals 4, the collective bargaining and the home health care workers, both were, no matter what the language said, they were very much about unionization mm-hmm. in the state. In the home of Walter Reuther, when Democrats turn out to reelect a president of the United States, one would suspect that there would be a strong union presence. We know that the unions spent millions and millions of dollars, mm-hmm. particularly on Proposal 2. So, at first glance, a pollster or a pundit would say, well, you turned out your voters, mm-hmm. so that must be good for the props.
Right.
But it ended up not being. So why is it then that people went to the polls, elected a Democratic president, and turned back what could be considered Democratic constituent-friendly proposals? Part of the answer is unquestionably that there were just too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
There were 6 proposals, and if I went out in your office right now mm-hmm. and found 4 or 5 folks, either air personalities or
sure.
salespeople or you know front desk people, mm-hmm. and said, give me a brief description of all 6 proposals
right.
attached to the number, most of them couldn't do it. Not because they're not well-educated,
right.
but because it's too much to consume.
Absolutely.
It was a long ballot.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know how long it took me. There were people standing behind me when I was voting, and I know at some point, pardon me, somebody must have said, you would expect this guy to know what he's voting on.
Right.
But you really had to pay attention. You really had to be informed.
Right.
So when you have multiple issues on a ballot, it is not unusual for people to be confused. If they're mm-hmm. confused, they either don't vote or
right.
vote no.
Sure.
So that's one possible explanation. Another possible explanation is that people were aware of those issues, but they were unclear mm-hmm. as to what they meant. Was Proposal 2 really to preserve collective bargaining, or was it something else?
Right.
The commercials would have you
exactly.
believe on both sides that it was 2 very separate issues.
Mm-hmm.
The same for Proposal
mm-hmm.
4. The renewable energy proposal. The diametrically opposed commercials that said exactly the opposite
right.
thing. Who are you supposed to believe? At one point, the people that were opposed mm-hmm. To the renewable energy issue took an ad from the people that were in support. They took that ad and just reran it and said, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So there was complete disengagement
sure.
on delivery of facts.
Right.
So I think that there was confusion. I think there were people that were unsure. I think there were some people that were just concerned about the scope of changing
mm-hmm.
the basic structure of how we run our government, the Constitution of the state of
sure.
Michigan. And I think that was a problem.
Sure.
So I still think there's a disconnect for me in trying to understand
okay.
exactly how they went down. But I think those are
right.
some possible reasons.
And then Proposal 1, Schneider was banking on that. That didn't pass. What does that mean for Schneider going forward?
I don't think it's terribly significant, nor is it terribly surprising that it failed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because of the confusion, and perhaps some people went in and said, I don't like this. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't like this idea of an emergency manager who can do away with contracts, including collective bargaining
mm-hmm.
contracts, who can actually set aside elected officials,
mm-hmm.
you know, commissions, boards, that type of thing. And there may have been people who just said, you know, I don't think that's a very good idea. The difference with Prop 1 versus Prop 2 through 6
mm-hmm.
is that Prop 1 was a referendum. It was not a constitutional amendment.
Right.
And all it said was, do you agree with PA 4, which was the Emergency Manager Act? So you either affirm it or you negate it.
Right.
Well, they said, we don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to go away. So, as of today, PA 4 no longer exists. Most believe that that reverts the state back to PA 72, which was passed back in the 80s, which is the Emergency Financial Manager Act,
okay.
which is a little different. One of the difference, pardon me, one of the differences is that provision that allows the Emergency Financial Manager to go in and do away with elected officials and contracts. The PA 72 does not allow that. Now, without getting too confusing, because it was a referendum,
mm-hmm.
doesn't keep the legislature from going back in
mm-hmm.
and amending PA 72 to make it look more like PA 4.
Okay.
So that could come back.
Sure.
So The bottom line is that it was a defeat. PA4 goes away, and the law right now reverts, in the mind of most people, back to the old Emergency Financial Manager Act. But that's not the final word. I think even in lame duck, we may see some activity on
it. Okay. And you got the whole thing going on with Benghazi, General Petraeus. Do you feel that this could turn into something much larger? Do you think it could turn into something of magnitude of a Lewinsky scandal or a Watergate? Do you think there's more behind the scenes on this deal?
I'm loathe to give personal opinions, and because I'm not in Washington covering either of those events on the ground, it's hard to know. But let me give you an assessment, which is less of an opinion than it is just taking a look at the view that I see from, you know, 1,000 miles away. The Petraeus and the rest of the military problems that stem from Tampa and the people involved there, as of this moment, as you and I sit and talk, I haven't seen evidence that that goes a great deal further than really bad judgment. The FBI is put in a really difficult situation. On one hand, they have a responsibility not to discuss criminal investigations with people outside of the agency. On the other hand, they have a responsibility to report to other agencies if there is some type of national security risk involved. So they were brought into this to investigate the possibility of, as I understand it, some kind of threatening email. In the course of that investigation, they started uncovering things that involved some very high-ranking military people, including General Petraeus, who by then, of course, was the head of the CIA. So at some point, they had to go to the White House or Congress or someone. They had to say, hey, look, here's the issue. If that had had been two civilians that were not involved with the military... At least up to now, it doesn't appear that there was anything much beyond some really bad, bad judgment. That being said, the investigation continues, and as we know from any number of scandals or faux scandals that we've seen over the years, you don't necessarily have to have the weight of evidence behind you to make it a real full-blown issue. So I don't think we've heard the end of it. As of right now, I don't see anything that rises much above some really bad behavior. Now, the different case with Libya and with Benghazi particularly is that while there will be investigations, now, I don't know if they'll be Watergate style as some have called for, but there will be investigations. And without knowing the outcome of those investigations, I can't tell you exactly, you know, what it will bring. But what it will do is it puts pressure, and we saw it earlier in the week when both Senator McCain and Graham stood up and said that the ambassador to the UN, Rice, is not going to be the next Secretary of State. Well, because that individual hasn't been nominated, it's so much conversation, so much rhetoric, but it really does send a message that, at least in the U.S. Senate, some of these people who keep a close eye on international affairs and Department of State issues are already making decisions about how that department might be run after Hillary Clinton. And it puts the president in, at least tacitly, in a box, because now the question is, if he wanted Ambassador Rice to be nominated for Secretary of State, and by the way, I think there are other names on that list that would come up before hers, then he has to calculate, do I really want to get into this argument with Lindsey Graham and John McCain and the rest of their supporters, or do I want to go a different direction? Or do I want to say, I'm the president of the United States, I get to choose my cabinet, I select the ambassador, and it's up to you to approve this nomination. Is that the kind of fight you want to get into at the same time that you're trying to figure out how to avoid the fiscal cliff? You got to come up with a, some kind of a resolution to raise the debt limit again, and probably in the first 90 days of the next year. How many battles do you want to pick all at once? So to the degree that Benghazi has already had that kind of fallout, it does have an impact. As for the investigation itself, I don't know what they'll find. It probably or could result in a change of protocol for the way we protect our embassies around the globe, which could be a positive thing. But an examination of what happened is certainly, I think, certainly called for. It would be nice if it could be done devoid of the political gamesmanship that will undoubtedly follow. But that's kind of a pipe dream, because we know that's not going to happen.